B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
Joining us right now, our own Devon Givens. Devon, first and foremost, thanks for sending me that fine audio from last night with player intros, man.
Good morning. No problem. No problem. Glad I could help.
Absolutely. Now, Al Horford comes off the bench for the Sixers last night. Were you thinking it was about time? Did you think it was something that Brett was going to wait for after the All-Star break? What'd you make of it?
I did think they would wait until after the All-Star break, giving them one more opportunity to go out there and see what they had. Especially with Josh Richardson being inserted back into the starting lineup. We've heard so much about the lack of minutes, the lack of time that the starting five that we spoke so highly about in the offseason once all the transactions were done, of the, just the lack of playing time. So Josh Richardson coming back from his injury, dealing with the hamstring, and of course Al Horford struggling a bit, but you had another ball handler out there. And we know Shake Milton did a nice job in his place during that time, but Josh Richardson is a different type of player with the explosiveness that he has. And figured that they would give it one more shot to see if Al Horford could coexist with those guys and take the break, do what they need to do, and come back on the 20th and go from there. But I was surprised. But we've heard it for so long that this could potentially be something, especially when Brett Brown said on Sunday that everything was on the table when asked about a possibility with the change into the starting lineup. So I was a little bit surprised. And thought they would give him an extra game since this was the final one before the All-Star break. But so far, so good with the new lineup.
Why would it take this long to realize that, you know?
Yeah, well, I see, for me, Trey, I'm one to believe that Al Horford did not figure out how to play basketball. I thought it was more of everything else around him because he's never been that 17-point, 18-point per night guy. He was always that 14 to 15, get you those rebounds, solid defense, and be that signal caller as well in the defensive end and do what he does. But with the uniqueness of this lineup with Ben Simmons, it's always going to come back to that with him being that 6'10 point guard and Joel Embiid also operating from the top of the perimeter. You're talking about three people who need to work effectively on the low block. And while he can hit that 3-pointer, we don't want to see him hoisting up 9 3-pointers a game. He lives in that mid-post area. He lives along that baseline right around 14, 15 feet, knocking down that jumper, that face up, the back down, all of that work. And it gets too cluttered. And as much as I love Ben Simmons, we always come back to that of how different the lineup is, how different the offense is, having to work within that structure with someone like Al Horford. So we can always go back to you shouldn't have brought him in here in the first place, but once you got him, you got him. So now figure out how to use him. And I just think that, of course, they didn't ignore how to use him, but if we're looking at the totem pole as to who's going to do what, who's more important within our flow of the offense, and it with him being as unselfish as he is, they're going to look for, of course, Embiid, Simmons, and Harris to get things done first. So I think they wanted to just simply give it time. And Trey, let's be honest, if they didn't have 21 win losses right now, he would still be in that starting lineup, even if he was averaging the same amount of points. It's all about the total of losses that they've accumulated, the clunkiness of the offense when he is out there. I think they would have given it more time had they had more wins higher in the seed in the Eastern Conference. But right now, they just felt like they had to press some button, and that was the easiest button to press.
Devon, Ben Simmons has just been extraordinary over the last month and a half. And, you know, if you look at it from the outside looking in, he's still not shooting the mid-range jumper, certainly not stepping out to three. So all that hasn't changed. But what in your mind or what in your eyes have changed with him to elevate his play to where he is right now?
Well, we always speak about him getting out of his own way and thinking too much. He's just being aggressive going to the basket. He's taking on that challenge of getting to the free throw line now and stepping to the free throw line. Bob, as you and I talk about a great deal, getting there, stepping to the free throw line confidently and knocking those down. So I think with the aggressiveness there and seeing how things, just allowing things to come to him. Early on, the first game of the season against Boston where he was the best player on the floor, he gave them 24 that night to start the season at the center. And then he kind of tailed off. They got the 5-game winning streak. They had some of the other losses and so on and so forth. And we saw a few games here and there. But let's not forget about the shoulder injury as well. Then he had his own issues where we had some brain cramps that he had. But I just think he stepped up and seeing spots and certain opportunities where he feels comfortable and getting things done on the low block, in that dunker's position, willingly, right? We see him a lot more off the ball where Josh Richardson, Shake Milton is bringing the ball up, how Neto is in there with him, he's bringing the ball up, initiating things. And I just think he looked at that and saw that the aggressiveness that was needed within how things were going, sometimes with things stalling out a little bit, that he had to step up his game and be a little more aggressive on the offensive end and get his. He's always going to get the assist totals. He's always going to get those numbers. So it's about the point totals as well and making sure the defense is honest where they cannot just simply live and sag in the paint on Joel Embiid when he's trying to set up that deep post position. And I can't stress enough just the free throw percentage that he has right now. Once he makes a few, and we all play sports where we talk about it. Once you see one go in and you start feeling better about yourself in that regard, he's going to continue to do it. And that's what he's done. So I love the aggressiveness. I continue to say the same thing about him and his aggressiveness. And that's what he needs to do in order to be the most effective player that he can be for this team.
Speaking with our own Devon Givens here, you can hear him doing shows here, obviously, weeknights here on 97.5 The Fanatic, also Sixers pregame. Devon, when it comes to a guy like Glenn Robinson III working his way into the starting lineup, do you think eventually that's what Brett Brown will do, or is it going to be more Korkmaz when we come back from the break?
I looked at it as experimental based on what was going on within the next game that's upcoming and seeing what was happening. I'm not going to say just simply having the idea of having the structure of one player being that guy. Maybe he feels like Furkan Korkmaz can give them something different one night, whereas Matisse Thybulle can give you another dimension on another night, depending on who the opponent is. But Glenn Robinson, starting the second half last night after Furkan Korkmaz struggled in the first half, it was a nice stroke by Brett Brown to decide to put him in that starting lineup because of the defensive presence that they needed out there with those wings that the Clippers have. So totally different player, Glenn Robinson, since we saw him when he was coming in here during the rebuild time. And I like what I see right now. But, yes, being able to be that slasher, that defender, that versatile defender on the wing that this league has become, I wouldn't be surprised if he did go that way and decided to stick. But I'm also curious to see, Mark, if he looks at a situation, again, who the opponent is, what they might need that particular night, and if they can live with having Furkan Korkmaz in the starting lineup where he's not a defensive liability, and then the next night or maybe a week later deciding to go to Glenn Robinson or Matisse Thybulle.
Speaking with Devon Givens, looking at Joel Embiid, can you remember an athlete that needed to find motivation in the weirdest places, in a weirder spot than even Joel Embiid has found him? Because I can't think of anybody that's needed to either troll fans, troll another player as much and as often as Joel Embiid has done, or even just to get the bright lights on him to play as best as he can.
No, I cannot remember. And I heard Trey talk about it earlier this morning. Where you figure, how do you have to manufacture seeing so many different things to get yourself going? When you are as great as you are, and he is great, but there are those things that he needs to be pushed to do, whether it's Shaquille O'Neal and Charles Barkley, the fan base getting on him the way that they do, playing against Jimmy Butler, Andre Drummond, Hassan Whiteside, those things that he has to manufacture instead of just being that same guy that comes out there every night and gives you 27 and 13 like we saw a season ago. Last night, he was great. And yes, he had something to prove based off of what played out on Sunday against Chicago in their home win. But why do you need those things to manufacture and to light that fire underneath you instead of simply looking at it as, hey, we have 19 losses on the road. We cannot afford too many losses anymore. We went at home. Let's just go out there and get this W. It doesn't have to be anything else, whether it's going back and forth with the fans, getting into it with Marcus Morris, any of those things. It's a puzzling thing about him. As much as I, again, like him, it was always said to me, and obviously Bob knowing being around so long, that he has this selfish way about him that is not necessarily that endearing, and that can get in the way. And he's so smart sometimes he's in his own way. And until he is looking at it and as for what it is, taking what happened in the Toronto series and losing that series last playoffs, taking what has happened in the offseason and thinking about what he told everyone. He wants to be defensive player of the year. They want to win 60 games. Those things came from his mouth. So what more motivation do you need other than what you told us publicly when the season started, what happened to you and your teammates at the end of that Toronto series, where you can argue with him being injured that he played a part in it, not advancing to the Eastern Conference Finals last year. So I've never seen it, Mark. I'm not surprised anymore after 6 years with him, with so many things that have gone on. But in order for them to advance where they need to be, and they still have a big-time climb that they have to do to get to 3-2 in the Eastern Conference standings. They're going to need him to be healthy and motivated without the things manufactured.
So, Devon, and I don't know how you took it. I took it as, I mean, Bob rolled his eyes, so did I. I looked at it as, hey, sure, whatever, Joel, whatever you need, when he trolled the fans and then when he went on social media about it as well. But then talking to Tobias Harris last night, and we just played the audio, he said he actually reached out to Joel to make sure that everything was cool. That shows that the team was taking it seriously, and they weren't laughing it off. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I did the same as you guys when everything came out. I kind of looked at him like, all right, here we go again. And here we go again, meaning just thinking back to being told this years ago of how selfish he is. He has to do this for himself. He feels like he's being attacked. Let me get my back up and make sure that no matter who it is, even though it's my family, it's the people that support me in terms of the fans who've been behind him from day one, that he has to go out there and do it. And yeah, I like the leadership from Tobias Harris. I didn't know much about his leadership coming in here to Philadelphia, but you can see it. It really stood out to me last year, number one, against the Lakers, his second game, I believe, after being traded, where he snatched the ball off the rim and ignited the fast break in Ben Simmons, as he always has, right, guys? Mm-hmm. Always waited for that outlet. And Tobias was like, no, run. And you saw it again this year, where he got into him for not shooting on one particular occasion. I believe, I don't remember the game, but it was at home, and they had a good play afterwards, but going to the timeout, you could see on his face where Ben was trying to high-five him, and while Tobias did, he gave him the look like, dude, you are messing things up here. You have to do this. So I've seen that little bit of leadership from him. Josh Harris, it's unfortunate that he has to step in and be that leader after only being here for 53 games, but however they have to get it done, because Simmons and Embiid are not those two guys, and I'm fine with Tobias Harris and Josh Richardson having to do it, because at some point someone needs to do it, especially with 27 games remaining and you have 14 at home, 13 on the road, and we know they cannot do that. You need every bit of leadership quality that you have.
Devon, this question's going to have multiple answers from you, but you and I often, when we're talking hoops, we'll finish each other's sentence, because I think we think along the same lines an awful lot, but I'll put this to you. The Sixers offense is at its best when?
Joel Embiid is focused on getting his work done on the low block.
Opens everything else up.
Exactly. When he's down there like he did last night, you saw a concerted effort to make sure that he had those guys in deep post position. Even when the double team came, Bob, I saw a few times where he was able to take that dribble, bring the ball high to get it away from the smaller player that was coming in to swipe the ball away. And while Zubac was still there, he still gave him that little bit of a shoulder and that jump hook turnaround over the left shoulder to give him a better opportunity to score from about 7 to 5 feet in. That's when they're at their best. Because then when those double teams come hard and he had a low turnover number last night, he's able to get that ball out and find and identify where his teammates are. And then you see 11 points from Tobias Harris early. Why? Because the early touches were going to Joel Embiid. Those same touches going late in the fourth quarter to him, as well as the game got close, Josh Richardson erupts for 17 because the attention is being paid to him. So it all feeds off of him. And as long as he is able to get that deep post position and focus on that work and being locked in and keyed in on what he needs to do and not putting the ball down low and allowing it to be swiped away from some of those defenders that are digging down on him to knock the ball away, that's when they're at their best.
Devon, when can we hear you again on the Fanatic?
I'll be on 6 o'clock tonight, 6 to 10, and I'm sure we'll be talking a lot of basketball tonight.
Don't you miss Devon Givens. Thank you so much, brother. Appreciate you.
You're the man, Devon.
All right, you got it, guys.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.